It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared, unafeared here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individual, Don Boudreau. Now, he was one of the original summiteers, one of our first speakers at our 2001 Freedom Summit, which was 3 weeks after 9/11. Man, if we didn't know what was coming. And if you've been an attendee at the Freedom Summit over the past 10 years, you got a dose, and we said what was going to be happening with the economics, what was going to be happening with civil liberties, what was going to be happening in the growth of government, what was going to be happening with war, what was going to be happening. And we, I don't know, I don't think that we missed in any of the cylinders. So, but Don Boudreau, now he's chairman, was chairman of the Department of Economics at George Mason University from 2001 to 2009. He's still at the George Mason University, the economics department there. And he's been, served as president of Libertarian Think Tank, the Foundation for Economic Education. And I'm sure that you know Lawrence Reed. We had him on yesterday or the day before. He's going to be a speaker there also. So you're going to be talking about the economics. And we need somebody to be talking about the economics because economics is going to be key coming up. So, Don, please go ahead and add anything that you need to your bio so people know your background to be able to talk about the things that the people at the summit need to know. It's so great to have you back and on the show. You know, thanks for coming in. Go ahead and tell us what you're going to be talking about at the summit.
Well, I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure. My main topic is going to be globalization, or just the economics of trade. You know, there's so much misunderstanding about it now. People are demonizing China, you know, China's export policies and monetary policies. And I have a very different perspective on those things than does the mainstream media, and certainly than do people on Capitol Hill and on elsewhere on Pennsylvania Avenue. So I'm going to talk about that. I have a whole book entitled Globalization that came out a couple years ago that's aimed not at my fellow economists, it's aimed at a general audience designed to make the issues of trade and globalization clear and understandable, and I hope actually also enjoyable. So I'm going to talk about that. I love talking about trade and not only how trade enriches nations, enriches families, it's consistent, it's the only policy consistent with freedom. But also how it's the only ethical system, it's the only system consistent with our ability to thrive as individuals. And so I like talking about both the economics and the non-economic aspects of trade, and that's what I'll focus on during my time in Phoenix.
What do you mean the non-economic aspects? I mean, does economic this is the advocacy that I've seen a common theme from you and from people that we have at the Freedom Summit is that they understand economics to be kind of key to everything that has to do with our freedoms.
Oh, look, I'm a professional economist. And it's the discipline that's nearest and dearest to my heart. I love it. It's because I'm an economist. It's because I learned economics that I became interested in learning about the freedom philosophy and became interested in playing what little role I can in this world to help promote liberty. By non-economic, I just mean I think free trade is important and vital, even if it doesn't lead to improvements in living standards. Now, I think it does lead to improvements in living standards, But I think that I feel in my heart that it's simply wrong for you or anyone else to tell me, even if that person happens to work on Capitol Hill under a white domed building, to tell me that they don't want me purchasing goods and services that I voluntarily would otherwise choose to purchase. So that's a non-economic aspect of it. It's sort of a philosophical, just liberty is a value in itself aspect, and also other aspects to it. A lot of people worry about free trade and globalization not because it makes people poorer, but in fact because it makes people richer. It's kind of an odd argument. They worry about free trade because they think it it makes us too materialistic, because it makes our lives so much easier. We don't have to struggle as hard. It destroys our culture. It undermines our culture. And I address a number of these issues in the talks that I give and that I will give at the Freedom Summit on trade.
Well, I'm hoping that you make it there without getting groped too much. You know, what's your view on... a lot of the news that's going on, Ron Paul is here right now. We have, some live broadcasting we've already done from him at ASU. He's really stepped up on this TSA thing. It's going to be a big deal here in Arizona on the day before Thanksgiving. And this kind of is a manifestation of a lot of other things. And it really comes down to one of the statements that he made is that, look, we're of the opinion now that we've accepted the idea that they're going to protect us, they're going to corral us, they're going to feed us, and sooner or later, they're going to eat us. And I know he was talking about economics. He's like, look, man, the only thing they want from us is whatever we can produce for them. So at what point is this going to stop? I mean, is there a limit? Are they just going to keep printing the money? Is it going to because this QE2 thing, I mean, what do you see in the near future? I mean, we're talking about between now and the next summit. I mean, the Freedom Summit is an annual update or a current status of freedom. And when what they're doing with the dollar is going to have an impact like not later. And maybe even by Christmas, we already are starting to see a lot of things. How do you think that's going to manifest itself in our lives?
Well, inflation is the obvious answer to that question. I know you know that. And I think people of any sense do know that, and we do see some indices now that are starting to creep up. You simply cannot pump that much money into an economy on top of all the money that's been pumped in the past 2 years and not expect to see inflation. I am, frankly, surprised that inflation hasn't manifested itself already, but I don't take the absence of rampant inflation today as if any comfort that we won't have galloping inflation tomorrow. Now, whether it starts, literally tomorrow or next month or maybe first of the year, I agree with you. I don't think it's that far away. Let me be clear. I don't think we're going to have, a Brazilian style or certainly not a German style hyperinflation, but I do think we're going to return to something like the inflation rates that we saw in this country 30 years ago. Pushing, in the double digits, and so nominal interest rates, mortgage rates, they're going to start to skyrocket. I just don't see how that's not going to happen. In fact, the only scenario I can see for that not happening is this is an utter, complete collapse of the economy, which I don't think is going to happen. But given what these clowns in Washington are doing, and what a lot of clowns in state governments are doing, it's as if they want to cause the economy to collapse, because most of their policies are just they're designed to cut the heart out of entrepreneurial capitalism. And
why would you think so? I mean, we had silver was down in the 15s just earlier this year. So and now it's almost double that. I don't know. I see some effects of inflation. I mean, dang, man. I don't know what else we're looking for.
I'll say what I had in mind. And maybe I'm being guilty here of being too much of a professional economist. Economists tend to focus on, at least as a first run matter, focus on the consumer price index.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that when we come back. You guys, stay right there. We got Don Bourdeau from George Mason University. The boy knows what's going on. He told us before He's going to tell us again right here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, my special guest, Don Bourdeau. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
You know, the way I see this, if this doesn't change, I see what has happened to the American people is we have accepted the notion that we should be treated like cattle. Make us safe, make us secure, put us in the barbed wire, feed us, fatten us up, and then they'll eat us. And we're a bunch of cattle, and we have to wake up and say, we've had it. I think this whole idea of an opt-out day is just great. We ought to opt out and make the point, get somebody to watch it, take a camera. It's time for the American people to stand up, shrug off the shackles of our government at TSA at the airport.
Wow. So maybe it might be economics. You know, we talked to local officials, Phoenix Police and the City of Phoenix and Sky Harbor and on and on and on. And it's come down to they are concerned about, you know, keeping their job or this or that. And say, but what they really are not really thinking about is the economics of it. It's very libertarian to do boycotts. It's very libertarian to vote with your wallet. Call it wallet voting. You know, so this is, you know, let's talk to economist Don Bourdeau and kind of, you know, what kind of impact can we expect from that? Is that a viable protest, us doing that kind of thing?
You know, I wish I could say it is. I mean, you're right. Boycotts are certainly, they're a long and celebrated economic protest tool that often do have effects. I don't see one day as changing much because the TSA is a big bureaucratic institution. It answers to politicians mostly, not really to consumers in the way that, you know, McDonald's or Nike answer to consumers. And so I'm actually not optimistic about the consequences. And I will say, I think it's a difficult issue. I love Ron Paul. I really do. It's a difficult issue. Ron Paul, of course, knows the true, I think, the root of this. The root of all this problem is America has its military involved in foreign affairs in ways that it should not. I'm convinced that if America followed Switzerland's policy, we just minded our own business, then there'd be a lot less few people in the world willing to kill themselves to kill Americans. And that would reduce these problems. It wouldn't make them go away, perhaps, but it would reduce the problem a lot. Given that, though, we're constantly out there disturbing this hornet's nest. We have all these hornets around trying to kill Americans, and you know, Americans rightly, and thank goodness for it, don't trust the government, and don't like these government officials scanning our bodies, touching our junk, which is the new term of art. And you know, the whole idea of this. People say, well, yes, but the idea is to save lives, and let's grant that for a moment, but. You know, here's an economic point for you. Economists understand that when costs rise, people change their behavior. The extremely long lines and the increasing indignity of going through airport screening in order to fly on planes, that's going to cause some people to substitute into alternative modes of transportation. Well, we all know that an alternative mode of transportation is, at least for medium-sized and short trips, is driving. We all know that driving is more costly than flying. And so it's not unreasonable to me at all that as airport screening becomes more costly in a variety of different ways, time, indignities, that some people are going to switch over to driving for short trips, and then that might actually increase the total death rate because highways are more dangerous places than the sky, the air. But you know, back to your original question, Mr. Hancock, I wish it would, but the problem is that the government's it doesn't get its payment by responding to consumers, and so therefore it's often deaf and insensitive to what its customers really want.
You know, I think they are. But I don't think the airlines are. I don't think the amusement parks are. I don't think the hotels and the tourism states like Arizona. The pressure comes from a lot of places, and it comes in via, you know, even congressmen. You know, they get a lot of pressure from something. So they got to, you know, pressures back and forth and this. And it finally gets to the point where, you know, the people just, like you're saying, they make, I remember the special, it was a John Stossel thing, Are We Scaring Ourselves to Death? And I remember the point that he made. Yeah, that was a great episode. I remember the point that was years ago. And he made the point, can you be guilty of statistical murder? When you start requiring all these different regulations on airlines that increase the price, and all of a sudden X amount of people will prefer to drive from San Francisco to L.A. as opposed to fly, all of a sudden you're increasing the death rate, you know, by because you're right, it is safer and a lot of times cheaper to fly. But when you start corralling people over towards the highways and you have more death, are you guilty of statistical murder? You know, well, they don't think that way.
I think that they don't, but they should, because that's exactly what happens. You know, my colleague, whom you may know of or know, Walter Williams, great economist, great American. Walter, he just refuses to fly commercially anymore. Now he's getting up in age, so he just chooses not to travel so much. But you know, when he travels between, say, Philadelphia and Washington, or Philadelphia, New York, he always drives. He doesn't take the shuttle any longer, precisely because his libertarian instincts are so deep. He just cannot stand to be herded and treated like cattle by these TSA agents, so he just will not fly any longer.
You know, I remember one of our first summits was, was it the first one or the second one? It was Aaron Zellman from JPFO, Jews for Preservation of Firearms Ownership. And he was scheduled to be a speaker, and then they started doing all of this frisking stuff, and he said, that's it, I'm done, I'm not coming, I can't, I won't fly anymore, we're done. And there are people that are even, if you're wealthy enough, you know, heck, I'll just buy my own plane. In fact, I know some people that have. But the thing is, now, just in the last year, you have to get TSA approval and have the names of everybody that's getting on your plane. Now you got to get permission to get on your own plane. So this is really, it seems like it's, they just cranked up the boiling point, you know, and chucking frogs in. Yep. And I'm going, is it time? Do you see this as, is this one of those things throughout history? There's before markers and there's after markers. I mean, is this one of those markers?
It's hard to say whether it will be. I think even more than this, I mean, it's changing subjects a little bit, but I think the Obamacare and the stimulus and the auto bailout will be one of those things. You know, I'll tell you, do I have time to tell you a quick story about...
Yeah, about 90 seconds. Go, man.
Well, you know, you said the first Freedom Summit I did was in just after 9/11. And here, talk about the frog. I remember very clearly being at the Phoenix airport that Sunday morning to fly back east. And that was the first time I was ever asked to remove my shoes. And I remember thinking, Americans, we just won't stand for this. This is absurd. And now... You know, and I admit, I'm one of them too. I go up there, I take my shoes off without any thought. And so it is scary and incredible how quickly we become accustomed to being treated like cattle. And at some point, it's got to stop. And I would like to see it stop now.
And we're getting closer to it. Don Boudreau at the Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. Thanks for coming on, Don.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what we fight for here in Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Oh, one of my good friends, man. He's a big independence declaring kind of guy. And big doesn't say it all. Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a. Kane with the WWE. You know, I will put up his site here real quick, The Adventures of Citizen X. Now, Glenn is a good hardcore libertarian type individual. You know, Glenn, I want to give you an opportunity. Just anytime we get to visit and talk with each other is always a good show for a lot of the people. I know you got a lot of fans out there. And I want to – there's so much news going on. And we're always trying to get you to come to the Freedom Summit. It's just that you're so busy still traveling and everything. I mean, how long are you going to be jumping from the top rope, man?
A while yet, man. I'm still having fun. So as long as I'm having fun, I guess I'll keep on doing it.
Oh, this is it's hardcore. I mean, Glenn's puts on a really big show. We go down when you come into Arizona and we're like, cane me! We want to be caned! We have a good time, so it's always a pleasure to see you perform. You know, you got involved in politics here of late. Tell us about that. You know, how did that come about? Why did you all of a sudden become so concerned about what was going on in your life here in America and for everybody?
Well, actually, Ernie, I despise politics. The reason I think that a lot of us are interested or become interested is because it does affect our lives so much. I've heard it said that politics and government should be the least important thing in our lives, but it's the most important thing in our lives. It's everything's been tipped over and turned on its head. And that's how I first became interested. Years ago, Val Venus, actually, Sean Morley from your area out in Phoenix, told me about the LP, the Libertarian Party, because I was sort of struggling. Was I a conservative, a liberal, Republican, Democrat? And at times I was both, and at times I was neither. And like I said, Sean told me about the LP, and I was like, yeah, I sound a lot more like a libertarian. And then the more I got into studying the philosophy, the more I realized it wasn't about issues, but it was a philosophy. And basically, people should be free to do what they want as long as they don't hurt anybody else, that people should be in control of their lives, and the person who best controls his life is that person and not some politician or bureaucrat. And it's amazing to me, I guess, that unfortunately in this day and age, people that believe that, like you and me, are considered absolute radicals. I mean, all I'm saying is that people should be free. Isn't that a really good thing?
I vote that. You know, we got Sierra in the studio here in the video. She's holding up a cane me sign. Cane me. It's always great to talk to you, and you're such a great voice for freedom. And tell me about, your blog that you started, Adventures of Citizen X. I remember, it was probably a couple of years that you were doing radio podcasting. So, LRN.FM, man, we need to get you on there regular. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Ian's talked to me about doing that. I just don't have enough time, man. There's so much stuff and so little time. But yeah, just with the blog, I think just like a lot of people, I just wanted to start voicing my opinion and tell folks what I thought about things. And fortunately, as of now, we still have a free internet where people can do those things. Unfortunately, the government's doing everything it can to shut down the freedom of the internet. Hopefully we can fight them off.
Well, one of the other things that you were really concerned about was this TSA thing. I mean, you called me, last week or two, and you were worked up about it because you got to go through this stuff a lot.
I fly generally at least twice a week. I fly out to wherever we're performing, and then I fly back home. So I am a frequent traveler. I mean, I'm a million miler on one airline. I've got hundreds of thousands of miles on other airlines. So, yeah, this is right in my face. I mean, this really affects people like me. And it's just completely unacceptable, Ernie. I mean, the level of security in the airports, first of all, it's amazing to me to think that this the idea that terrorists will take over an airplane after 9/11 gains any traction with people. If we all recall, immediately after 9/11, several unruly passengers were actually beaten to death by other passengers on the plane. I don't think anyone's going to get on an airplane and take it over anymore. That's just not going to happen. So the focus should be on the cargo, not on the passengers. But I think as libertarians, we need to shift the paradigm all the way over from not only the level of security, but who is providing that security. And as a libertarian, I believe that the market would do a much better job than the government's doing. And not only would it be more efficient, more effective, but it would also be much less invasive than these procedures that the government has implemented.
You know, I'm hoping that where we'll get to is that we have an understanding of what the proper role of government. If you're going to have one, you know, there's kind of simple things they should be doing, and pretty much leaving us alone is a big one. But for someone that travels as much as you do, you kind of stick out. I mean, you're a tall guy. You're 6'9" or something?
Yeah, I'm a pretty big guy.
So you're going to, you know, you don't go unnoticed. So when you go opt out, and if you want to feel me up, you know, heck, for you, they might have to reach up. So I'm just wondering, you have any experiences yet with this? Have they started to do the full body pat down on you? They're going to need a couple of guys.
Yeah, I do have a lot of body. No, I haven't, actually. I haven't gone through an airport, or more specifically, actually through a checkpoint that has the body scanners. So when I've gone through them before and opted out, that was before the TSA implemented the new, essentially, groping policy. And the way this works is at most airports, it's sort of strange how they've done this, because it's sort of ad hoc. They've just thrown the machines out there. Like in Chicago, there's a lot of the body scanners, Chicago O'Hare. Some of the other airports, they're here and there. It's on the smaller airports, there are no body scanners at all. They still just have the metal detectors. And one of the ways you can avoid them still is you can find a checkpoint where there aren't any of the body scanners, or they only have metal detectors. Because at a lot of the big airports, they don't have them at every security checkpoint. And then, two, what will happen is they'll pick like every third person to go through the body scanners. You know, most people go through the metal detectors, and every once in a while they just pull someone out at random to go through the body scanners. But to answer your question, no, I haven't been subjected to the new pat-down rules.
But you will be, and as much as you travel. Well, you know, the thing is that the only reason they have as few people going through it now as they do is because they can't build them fast enough. I mean, you know, Chertoff is still cranking them bad boys out, you know? These,
right.
You know, this is just, you know, here they are, and there's going to be more, and it'll be, you know, first they have one in the, I remember when they had the first one at Sky Harbor, I was flying, I took a picture of it with my cell phone. I got my BlackBerry, you know, boom, got it. Yep, see, this is what it looks like, and it was kind of off to the side. It wasn't even in line. It hadn't installed it
right yet.
Then they get installed. Then they put, you know, the other terminals get it. You know, we got, I think, three terminals here at Sky Harbor. So they'll put the second one, the third one. Then they'll start putting more. I mean, it's going to get to the point where it's total recall with Schwarzenegger, man. I mean, you're going to have.
Well, yeah, the TSA is, that's one of the things they lied about. They said that the body scanners were going to be a secondary screening device. If you went through the metal detector and the metal detector went off, you had the option of either pat down or going through the body scanners. Now, what they've done is they've made the body scanners the primary screening device. And, of course, as you say, they're going to be everywhere at some point. That's going to be the primary screening device, which the TSA said that it was never going to begin with.
Oh, they're going to make some money. Money! Yeah.
Well, sure, yeah, sure off is. As an aside,
well, let's go ahead. They're going to push the button on us, man. We're going to hold your thought, and we'll get right back to it. You stay right there with Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a. Kane. Well, tell us what's on his mind when we come back here on Declare Your Independence.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, what's that mission here on Declare Your Independence? With me, Ernest Hancock, and a big independence declaring kind of guy, Glenn Jacobs. Glenn, you know, one thing that we were talking about, let me go ahead and pull this up. You know, we got rape a scan. I thought it was a joke when I saw it on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He was doing a, you know, pronounced it. I'm sure they want to say you know, rapist scan, but, you know, rapist scan is more appropriate. But it's just, it's, you know, seriously, it's like these guys are messing with us. You know, they're just jerking with us. They're just like, yeah, what are you going to do about it, you know? So I'm just, wow. Is it that bad? I just want to know, you know, what you think about all the money-making opportunities of this and everybody around. You got some personal experience there in Tennessee, don't you?
There was a
congressman or something there.
On YouTube, there's a clip of Jimmy Duncan, who's a congressman from the 2nd District in Tennessee, and he's actually not too bad as politicians go. I actually got this from LouRockwell.com. Someone else sent it to me, but Lou had posted it as well, and I guess Duncan actually reads LRC, which is pretty cool. In any case, Duncan is on the House floor, and he just lambasted the TSA, and he did what most people in the media have glossed over. He pointed out that Michael Chertoff stands to make a lot of money off of this because the Chertoff Group, which is Chertoff Company, is a consulting firm, and one of their clients is RapeScan, which has hundreds of millions of dollar contract with the federal government, with the TSA, to provide the body scanners.
I'm so shocked. So what are we going to do? We're going to wait and see how this goes. I know we had talked before, and you were very animated about making a point, doing something. All this that's happening, is that going to give you an opportunity to do that? Are you satisfied? Is there a little extra Ventures of Citizen X wants to, you know, pour something on the fire?
You and I talked about making a video, and I think that's actually the way to go. And it's already happening, to just ridicule these guys and to make fun of them. I mean, who can take this seriously? I mean, it's ludicrous. And the stories that are coming out now in the lawsuits, the TSA, like, exposing women's breasts and then laughing about it and that sort of stuff. And if you read a lot of the comments on the news articles about the TSA, most travelers already have had, they're fed up with them. They've had it. So, I mean, I don't know.
Well, how does that manifest itself with you? I mean, you know, what is it that you're going to do when they say, all right, it's time to grope you? You're going, well, you're going to be jealous.
I'm going to make sure it's done right out in public because I want everybody to see how the government actually treats people. Unfortunately, if I want to keep my job, I have to fly. My family will not fly anymore because I am not going to allow them to be subjected to these sort of things. And I think the more people that are subjected to them, the more they'll realize that this is not for your protection. This is a control mechanism. It's really to humiliate people and to control you. You know, and there was an article I read that where the TSA was even admitting, TSA agents were admitting that the new pat-down procedures were designed to embarrass people and humiliate people to the point that they would go through the body scanners. And the thing about the body scanners is it's one of those deals, it's like the income tax. It's like inflation. Inflation's a hidden tax, right? So people don't really object to it. Same with the body scanners. They're perceived as being less invasive than the pat-downs because you don't actually see what's happening, but it's still pretty upsetting to me, the idea that any stranger is going to be able to see people's naked bodies. And then, of course, you have the health effects, especially with the backscatter x-rays. Someone like me, I don't think that my doctor would be comfortable prescribing me going to get x-rays twice a week, but now the TSA is going to send me through an x-ray machine twice a week. There's a problem with that.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. I'm trying to see what the real problem is. To me, it's not how they scan you or, you know, all that stuff is not important to me as much as my freedom to not have to be scanned. You know,
right,
can I get on Flying Die Airlines? I mean, do I have that option? I'd like to, you know, just do something else. You know, but that's not what's going on here. So I'm really concerned that we're losing what the real issues are, is they've taken choices.
We are. And it's, like I said, at the start of our segment here, it's about a paradigm shift. And it's about getting people to ask the question of, should the government be involved in providing the service? And I guess what's sort of amazing to me and to you too is the fact that things that if a private company did these things would be completely unacceptable, would be outrageous, people wouldn't patronize that business. It's perfectly okay if the government does it. Can you imagine if Carnival Cruise Lines, for example, decided that they would have to subject everyone that was going to utilize their service to the same thing that the government, the TSA, is doing? No one would get on cruise ships anymore.
Well, at least they'd have the option.
Right. Well, yeah. And it's the same here. There's one, you know, people are like, well, the reason the government does this is because the market can't do it. But we don't know if the market can do it or not because the market is not allowed to compete at all. And then, two, it's an unfair playing field anyway because the government has monopoly. They have, they can tax people. They can get as much resources as they need. But I think you would find that the market would be able to do these same things as far as providing protection services cheaper, more effectively, and in a more acceptable manner than the government does.
Yeah, really what's going on is they don't want us to have that opportunity to even find out. And I'm seeing that behind this whole thing is a much larger philosophical understanding of what their role is. And if our meeting, we were trying to be as nice as possible in how we portrayed our meeting with the Phoenix Police Department, and most of the guys there are pretty cool. But there was a couple, there were six of them. And they all represented high end of whatever. And there's a couple of them. They're like, man, you don't understand. We are the law. You will respect our authority. And, you know, I'm just going, wow, man, if you go into this the day before Thanksgiving and you got all of these students and individuals and active people, I don't even know. I mean, I'm just going, look, we can communicate whatever in the best way, too. But, you know, there will be somebody will have a firearm legally. They'll be concealed. They'll be open. There'll be somebody with their face painted blue and wearing kilts and going through the line. And, okay, you want to slowly feel up my leg? Well, that's all good, but you get what you get, you know. And, you know, you have for $59 Southwest Airline ticket, there's their plug. And then we have also, what's some of the other concerns? Oh, wearing a mask. I mean, you know, if we had, you know, Kane going in with his mask, I'm telling you, they would be like, you know, show the picture of one of you with your mask. I'm like, oh, you're getting stopped, man. And we were saying things like, well, what if they are Islamic? You know, they have headdresses or burqas or whatever. Well, it's a case by. I'm going, look, man, these things will come up. Are you prepared for it? Have you thought about it? And I don't think that they had. They were just wanted the overriding authority to just do whatever they want. And it went like this. Glenn, I told him, I said, when I'm sitting, have my latte, you know, in the concourse there or something, and you say I got a sidearm and you want to come over, you only need one, two, maybe a third cop, you know, standing back and, you know, and you're nice. And now you want to make sure that we're not intoxicated. And they said, we need to make sure you're of sound mind. Well, when the activist goes, what if I use my sound mind and not talk to you because I don't have to? You know, they don't like that. You know, I'm just, you know, these are the kind of things that we want people to not be stupid. And you can be nice. You go introduce them yourselves to them. You hold up your V mask and you say, yep, this is what I, you know, here I am. Are they going to want to take a picture of you? They're going to want to digitize. They're going to see, these are the kinds of things that they're thinking. They want ultimate control. That's how they think.
That's what the whole thing is about. It's all about a control mechanism. That's what all of this is. You know, Ernie, like, people sometimes tell me that I don't believe in laws, okay? Because, you know, I'll say certain things, okay? I believe in rules probably more strongly than anyone I know. I believe that laws should apply to everybody equally. The law, the rules that we all live by, should apply to all of us. How can that be the case when you have a group of people, say, in Washington, D.C., or in my case, in Nashville, Tennessee, who call themselves lawmakers, okay? We have two groups of people in this country now, two classes of people. We have the political class, the people who make the laws, and then everybody else, people who are expected to abide by the laws. So I that's one of the things that really frustrates me is when people say that I don't believe in rules and I don't believe in laws. I do. I believe in them, like I said, more strongly than most folks do. I just believe that they should be applied to everyone equally.
Yes, they should.
We can get it the whole way.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, it's Jim Sharp.
All right, thanks, Ernie. Take care, man.